work pass either. Okay, what's the secret word?
I'm not sure where he's at. All
right. The minutes are being passed around. We're gonna skip a little bit because I know some people have other meetings they have to go to. So we're gonna facilitate that if that's okay with everybody. So we'll jump to 7. Authorizing the chairman of the Elsa County Legislature to execute an agreement with New York State Division of Homeland Security Emergency Services for participation in the Local Emergency Management Performance Grant Program for federal fiscal year 2014. So. Pretty self-explanatory, but
yeah, that basically is a matching grant that we cover our salaries with, basically.
I'll move.
Second. Discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
And who put me in charge of being like a secretarial person too? I don't want to screw it up. 326. This is really Robin Caruso. This has to do with the watershed and
everyone's playing, Crash Bandicoot or something.
It's 326. Authorizing chairman of the legislature to supplement an agreement with any modifications with the city of New York and the west of Hudson stakeholders modifying the 1997 watershed memorandum of agreement and the 2010 water supply permit by enabling the city of New York to participate in the FEMA hazard mitigation grant program. Move it, somebody?
I'll move it.
Okay, Peter. Second?
Second.
Okay. Discussion? Okay, if not, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. That
was 26.
I feel like I should jump up and run to the ambulance. 327, authorizing chairman of the Elsa County Legislature to execute agreements with the city of New York and various towns for the purchase and demolition of homes damaged during Hurricane Irene and Tropical Storm Lee. Move it.
Second,
Peter. Discussion.
Is this in addition to Greater Catskill Flood Radiation?
It's in addition to,
and this has nothing to do with the last round of FEMA money that came in to buy out houses in Shandong and other places.
No, that is what this is. This is separate from the Greater Catskill Flood.
Okay.
From mediation.
is this inclusive of the, do we have a list of these?
The homes?
Yeah.
Robin Caruso will have, I've got a list, yes, but Robin Caruso, the disaster assistance coordinator, is now in charge of that program.
Okay.
All right, so it runs through the county attorney's office.
Is it in here? I don't know if the list is in here, so bear with me. Yep, looks like they are.
They both have it?
Yeah. Okay, to vote, or you need a minute? Okay, all in favor?
All right.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, so moved. 341, approving the execution of contract amendment in excess of $50,000 and for the County Taylor Recycling Facility, LLC. Is that where they're sending all the demolition?
That has to do with the Greater Catskill Flood Remediation Project. That's Taylor is one of the demolitions.
Shouldn't Mike Wendell be here harassing us?
He'll be at a meeting tomorrow if you want to go.
No. Oh, let's get a first and a second before I have a discussion of throwing Kenny over the side of the future. Move it.
I'll move it.
Second.
I'll second.
Done. Okay, thanks. Other discussion that's pertinent to the topic?
No.
Okay, all in favor? That was good, though, Kenny. Opposed?
I'm a friend of his on Facebook, so I get to see all his posts firsthand.
You are one lucky dog. He stopped calling me. I don't know why. The minutes. Has everybody had an opportunity to look at the minutes?
Yeah.
Okay. Motion and to approve the minutes?
So moved.
Second.
Second. Discussion, any additions, deletions, corrections? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay, good.
Thank you, sir.
Okay, thank you. I know if you're having a meeting with the firemen tonight, you're having a fight your place. So, let's see. Okay. All right.
Sheriff's on his first one.
Well, we can, but you have to come in here. You always say you want to go last. I thought you did. Let's go to number 1309 concerning the leash law or tethering law.
I call the leash law.
Everybody. Okay, everybody should. Okay, everybody should have a copy. Question. Let's get a motion and a second, and we'll go to discussion. Okay, Peter, second.
Second.
Okay, good discussion. Yeah, I didn't know if anybody had any questions first, or
if you want Ken to start, or if you want me to start, it doesn't matter to me.
Good. Flip coin. Heads, tails. Ken can go first.
If you want to just give an explanation first, whatever you want.
Well, it's kind of straightforward from the point of view that there is no law governing the tethering of dogs. It has been an issue in several circumstances, according to humane groups. County has an opportunity here to put a law into place that would set forth some reasonable standards. The law, as you see it in front of you, has been worked out in cooperation with animal rights groups locally and statewide. There were compromises made in the law. There were some stronger things that were requested that were watered down a little bit for fairness. For example, there was the request that dogs not be tethered. Well, it's a difference of opinion. Some said 2 hours, some said 6 hour limit. The argument, some 8 at most, and we have 12 hours in here limits in any day. The reasons vary and include potential mental cruelty to the animal because dogs are considered social animals that need human contact, and when they're left alone for too long a period of time and isolated, it can result in having a hostile personality come about that encourages them to bite at people and snap, and so that's one of the reasons for limiting them. There's also the concern about dogs that are left outside and kind of tie themselves up in running gaps or whatever it is that dogs do to entertain themselves, and then are almost left in a choking position. Occasionally, dogs even do strangle themselves in that way, and so there was concern that the wording in this law be phrased in a way that required the consideration be given to that with the length of the leash and what was near it. So you don't necessarily put a dog on a leash near a tree where it could easily wrap itself around or a pole or something else in the way the outside tethering is done. And of course that requires shade and water and keeping a dog out when there's a bad storm, other things like that. And they're all included in here to provide some baseline protection for dogs that are left outside. And what was considered to be by the animal groups a great start in protecting animal welfare. Okay.
Yeah. I guess I have a lot of thoughts. A lot of them revolve around some of the same issues. So I guess I'll start from the top. You know what? Before we do anything, I think it's important that we make it clear what version we're working off of, because the original local law that was introduced bears very little resemblance to this one. because of a lot of changes that were made, a lot of cleaning up that was done. So I think at least procedurally, it's important that we make a that I guess like a, to make a motion at this point that we.
So we have a motion going.
Well,
we're working on the, what you have is the law that would be for the public hearing.
Right, but I'm set. But one of the things that I raised this in laws and rules. It start, you know, the law was introduced as the old form, which had a lot of, I don't want to say errors, but there was, it was a lot of confusion in the first draft. And then we just started working off of this draft. So procedurally, maybe we make a motion to amend the resolution as we have it now. That way, in some body of the legislature, we have moved to accept the new version as a replacement of the old version. I mean, if that makes any sense.
Well, in essence, as sponsor, I've withdrawn the old version.
Okay, so let's do this.
That's not what I understood from the clerk's office, so I was confused.
All right, so let's, okay. Then who had the motion on the original?
What did he say?
Who moved the original motion?
Maybe.
Okay, so, okay, will you rescind it then? Rescind the, okay. All right, so now then I'll entertain a motion then to...
For the purposes of this local law, we're now operating off of the version that we see here.
Okay, the version that's attached to the with the resolution. Okay. All right, second then?
I'll second.
Okay, all right, so now discussion. Okay,
thank
good.
You.
Okay.
Section 3, subsection B, in addition to... Subsection C, subsection H, all pertain to preventing entanglement, you know, of the tethered dog. It's a concern to me as a dog owner, I will say as a responsible dog owner who actually doesn't tether the dog, I take my dog on between 2 and 3 walks a day. It's probably a 3-foot leash. He's a big dog, and he ends up entangling himself while I'm walking him. It's very concerning to add an illegality to your dog becoming tangled at home, unless you're tethering them in an open field when you meet the requirements of the length of the tether, and I would imagine that we would want the tether to be. You know, as long as possible to allow the dog most freedom to roam and freedom to move around. It's really concerning to me to have so many references to keeping the tether free of tangles, keeping the dog free of tangles, you know, keeping the dog on the tether free from tangling himself. I mean, you put a dog in a yard, if there's anything to get tangled around, if there's a rabbit or a mouse or a chipmunk or anything else that you know, is out of doors, the dog's going to get tangled. I discussed this with Brian Shapiro from the Humane Society, and you know, I don't feel like we ever got to a point where I fully understood, you know, why the need for these provisions about tangling. So I guess that's one of my questions.
I'd like to respond to that.
Please.
In talking with some of the animal groups about that. And this basically came from them, not my origination. The feeling was that a dog can literally strangle themselves in getting entangled. And the object of this is to make it, is to minimize the opportunity that that would happen. Now, if your yard, a dog owner's yard is such that they don't have an area they can place the dog tethered that would be free from some of these trees or poles or other factors. Or alternatively, if you have a kind of dog that is so hyperactive, I'm told, as to be likely to entangle themselves as a dog when you take them for a walk, you entangle himself, there's a chance that dog may kill himself. Maybe it's not a dog that should be tethered outdoors. Maybe it's the kind of dog that needs to be treated differently, because the whole object here is to protect the dog from putting themselves into a highly restrained position where they can't move and are left for hours and hours and hours, or in a situation that might actually hurt themselves seriously or even kill themselves. And so that's the thinking behind it. And it has their, they do have the trolleys, which are presented as an alternative in an area where you have some trees, which limits the ability of a dog to entangle themselves in some ways because of the way it's mounted on top with the line going across and gives them more room to run. It does have a specified length of 10 feet or measured in some way to the dog size. And so from the animal welfare group's point of view, it's their belief that this is the best thing to do.
I'd be more comfortable with those references out of it, or maybe to add language that, you know, that the dog owner shall make such accommodations that would reasonably result in the dog not entangling himself, because I just don't think that you're ever going to get up to a place where the dog's going to get tangled in his tether. He's going to get tangled. I mean, having these kind of things in here that makes this dog owner, essentially a lawbreaker for having the dog get tangled up while they're at work. Let's say the person leaves the dog, goes to work, dog gets tangled, neighbor gets pissed off, neighbor calls Paul, Paul comes, writes a ticket. Now, just because that person went to work and the dog got excited and ran around in circles, the person's, violated a law in Ulster County. I have a big concern about that.
I have to ask this, how would you prevent a dog from getting entangled on a 15-foot leash? How could you guarantee that would not happen?
You can't.
But you can't guarantee that a dog won't get entangled. But if you have certain factors that are likely to contribute to that dog getting entangled.
And those factors would be?
Those factors would be posts, trees, steps that they could crawl under and wrap around the post, that kind of thing. Where they could, and this is what this law seeks to prevent. Now, if it was a one-time, if a person owns a dog and they have them out and they tether them, they're tethering them, they can see how that dog reacts, they can see what reasonable circumstances are, and if it's a hyperactive dog that's likely to get tethered because of their name, tied up and while they're tethered and put in a unsafe kind of situation, then you can usually predetermine that. You can know that. Is it possible that a dog could end up tangled at some point when normally there weren't? Something spooked the dog? I suppose it is. And I suppose that's something to be explained to the judge. And the first offense is not a major offense. It's like a parking ticket.
$200.
Well, I think that if you look at it, though, I think part of what the law addresses is the person that does go to work and leaves the dog outside for 10 hours is probably unwatched. I mean, I had a black lab. He could get tangled in the grass.
Yeah.
Okay? But it doesn't take much if something happens. So if you leave and go to work and you come home 8 hours later and your dog's hanging upside down, it's easy. Any dog could do that. So I think what the law is addressing is, maybe this isn't the exact way to say it, but maybe there should be different language about the length of time the dog is tethered, unattended, or not being watched. Maybe that guy should leave his dog in the house and not tether him.
Yeah, but I got to tell you, I did that once with a dog. And when I came home, that house was destroyed. He ate some of the clothes that he found. I mean,
right, but you put that dog outside, and something happens to him, you can see how quick you're in front of the judge looking at community service. Doc.
Well, the way I see it is, this is talking about things that you're required to do in order not to have the dog entangled. And if I look at note C here, which really is a statement that kind of everything else addresses, dog must be tethered in a manner that prevents entanglement around trees, poles, or other obstacles. All of that other stuff is deciding how to do that in a certain way. So I don't think if a dog does get entangled in his own leash and somehow knots it up and everything else, I don't think you're responsible necessarily for that. But what it seems to me is the driving issue behind this.
Well, I think that you'd be guilty of a violation of it.
Where does it say that if he's entangled, he's got a problem? That's it.
Because it says the dog must be tethered in a manner that prevents entanglements around poles, trees, and other obstacles.
Right, and you can
do
that.
If the dog becomes entangled, you've obviously not done that.
Well, poles, trees, and other obstacles, if he gets entangled in his own tether, then I don't think that would apply.
The tether could be seen as an obstacle.
Not really. And I think a judge would.
Well,
but the point of the matter is if you don't take care of your dog, you can do all kinds of things. And I don't see this as necessarily a problem, and I understand your point of view. Actually, sure, nobody wants to create a problem for people that are not looking to create problems. I got that. But I don't see it here where it says just because a dog is entangled, he's automatically guilty. We'll take all the precautions to do what this thing is telling you to do. Then within that structure, if there's an anomaly, I don't think you're guilty because you've done what it says to do. If that's the case. If you haven't, then you're responsible.
No. Okay. Hold on. Section B.
Section B.
Subsection I.
Subsection I.
The length of the stationary tether, blah, 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 blah,
right,
shall be free of tangles.
And it shall. He's not going to put tangles in it. He's going to be free of tangles when he puts the dog on it. Not going to have a tangle.
That's not the way I read that, and I'm not sure that that's the way every lawyer and every judge is going to read that.
I think we can pick and pick and pick.
I don't believe that's what I'm doing.
I'm not suggesting necessarily it is. But if we're parsing and mincing, it's getting down to a finite thing.
Just for the purposes of everybody sitting at the table, my goal with this is to find a way to punish those who abusingly tether their animals and not...
Right,
and not the people who are responsible dog owners who are using tethering as a manner of owning a dog.
For example, you've got a 3-foot oak tree, and you've got the chain attached to the oak tree, and the dog has been tied to the thing so long that the chain is now this long.
That's correct.
Because it's wrapped around and around and around and around and around. All the owner would have to do is every day or twice a day take under the chain, and now it becomes 10 or 15 feet long again. It's obvious that that guy is not minding after his dog. But at this, I guess my question would be, because otherwise we'd go round and round forever, my question would be, how many calls does the SPCA or your office or whoever, do they get now because people are concerned about trapped dogs or dogs that may are harming themselves, or do we get a lot of that?
No, I don't even know if we have had any having to do with tethering. The majority
it's not
of our
illegal. Yeah, but if somebody's
people call because they're worried about animals. The majority of our calls come from people that have their animals inside a car on a hot day.
Yeah.
Occasionally we get ones for their dog's been outside for 10 hours and there's no water. We send somebody. Other than that, we get ones that are neglected animals because they're hoarders.
Yeah.
They're old people that, you know, are a little off or whatever, and they hoard cats and dogs. And then we go with the SPCA and we take care of it. As far as getting single calls once in a while for a dog that's wrapped around, I don't think we have. But that's just us, and there's a bunch of other agencies.
I got a quick question. Do they have devices that you can attach your dog to? Like they go around a tree that he can run around and that it'll just follow him? I mean, I'm asking. I don't know.
Well, you can make
up. Do they have devices that are already made?
I don't think so.
You just put a loose loop around it. But if you're attaching the tether to a tree. But if you have another tree that's different than the one to which the dog is tethered, that's when they wrap themselves around, and that's when the damage is done.
Not only that, but if you do the loose loop and the loop comes off and the dog leaves your property, you violate the law because you didn't tether the dog in a manner where it stays on your own property.
All right. So
it doesn't come off. It's the
No, but have a chain that goes around and it hooks on.
Right.
At whatever point
I'm saying,
you want to hook it up.
Loose loop, it sounded like it was you were doing like a nylon leash or something like that, and it would come on, you know, it had the opportunity to come on.
What other, let's look at some of the other.
Let me,
hold on, let's go to Don, I'm sorry.
Just one question. I think you could put an overriding statement in there, talking about reasonableness and negligence and things like that, where the law isn't construed, and the concept is that you haven't been negligent, grossly negligent, or whatever, and it's all shouldn't apply. That would take care of all of the nearby trees and all that stuff that stupid people do. But if you've got a situation where somebody has done everything reasonable along the way and it just happened, then that would fall under that category and would move forward for a reasonable statute type thing.
I'll go back to, I think one of the first things I said was, you know, if we added something, a caveat to it where it said that if the dog owner has taken reasonable steps to ensure the dog does not tangle itself with other dogs or obstacles, you know, then, you know.
Is that fit good enough?
Well, suppose to make it as simplistic and yet encompassing of what's being discussed, on item C, you inserted the word before manner, just put the word reasonable manner.
Everybody's got to look for themselves, but yeah, the idea is to not punish somebody that's done everything they think is the right thing.
Well, if that's, but what happens if you get into a whole debate to say the right thing, what may seem right to you?
Reasonable. What I'm saying is if
right, but think about it this way. There's a section in here about shelter. Mm-hmm. So the dog has a 20-foot chain or cable, whatever the case may be, runs around the dog house a couple of times, jumps up on top because he thinks he's sneaky, jumps over the other side, hangs himself.
Yeah, with the dog mansion that's required, I'm just kidding, with the shelter that's required.
That could easily happen. We could go crazy with this. I mean, how often does it happen? I don't know. Now, again, you know, if you're leaving home and the dog's outside for 10 hours and they did an autopsy on the dog and find out he died 9 hours ago for a gut infection, could they say you were, you know, not a good dog owner? But
talk about dog autopsies, you're getting to my next point.
You had all the other things, but anyway.
One thing, I would like to, for me to support it, I don't think the first time it happens, it should be $100 fine. I mean, if you're going after people that do it on a regular basis, they're going to do it. They're not going to care much about it. But if there's a homeowner that has a dog that one day forgets to do something or whatever, and the first time that somebody runs to that house, they hit them with a $100 fine, that's a big chunk of change for something.
So you want to say up to $100, or you want to just say...
I just don't think that the first offense necessarily needs to be that stiff. I'm sorry, I just don't.
Well,
if somebody makes a mistake, I'm not going
to. Could you say up to?
You could say up to $100, and then it's up to
the judge's discretion.
It's up to the judge's discretion. That would be fine with me. But I just don't want the first time to be $100.
That's good. I actually agree with that. That we might want to add some judge's discretion here on all the fines, up to on all the fines.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think it should be that cut and dry.
And can you live with that?
I live with it for the first one, for the first offense. But when someone's back a second time, keeping in mind that it isn't like you have tethering police that are running around all the time and ready to catch everybody.
Hold on.
I'm waiting for the finish. I'm just letting you know.
He's on the batter's box
there.
That's correct.
But he's always there. We expect that. Usually before someone gets caught when they do something, it's usually not the first minute they step over the line. usually something goes on for a while, or you know, before someone ultimately gets caught in what they're doing. Sometimes they never get caught in whatever the crime it is. And so by the time you got them the first time, you know, I could accept the argument someone genuinely made a mistake or used poor judgment or didn't think it through, and the judge can use their discretion, and I'd say that's probably reasonable. But when someone comes back a second time, having already known the first time that they did something wrong and they repeated it, and then you come back a third time, you know, you've already abused them or twice, I would begin to think, hey, you might be habitual.
Well, it might be all different offenses, too. They don't always have to be the same offense. So if somebody does something, they do something else that, once again, they didn't realize was illegal.
It's all dog tethering.
Yeah, it's still, it says here, you know, if you turn right on right in New York City, they don't really care if you didn't realize that you could turn right on right on New York City. It's your job to know.
Yeah, ignorance of the law is no excuse, is what, right. with what they
right.
say.
Right. So are we trying to get people to change their behavior, or are we trying to make money?
No, we're trying. There's a couple of... if you try, you have to make them think twice before they do something. You know, to a lot of people, you're not just dealing with everyday people. Abusers come in all flavors. Some are very wealthy. We've seen that in some of the reports. And $100 is nothing to them.
Right. That's why you leave it up to the discretion of the judge.
But the judge can't do more than that. But the point is, there's an intention here to create an animal abuse registry that will come later. That comes after the third offense. You go on a registry because you're a repeater. And the other thing is, we have the option of doing is throwing jail time into the mix.
Okay, Ken.
Thanks. I'm in favor of the up-tos on at least the first two, and quite possibly all three of the violations on the fine schedule, because one of my deepest concerns with this law as a whole, without delving into any certain piece of it, is I've had bad neighbors in the past, and to me this law screams that this could be a Hatfields and McCoys issue, where the neighbor keeps calling the police keep giving tickets, and the person keeps being violated for the same thing or for separate things, or each, you know, or maybe there's, you know, I don't know.
You got to give the cops a little leeway.
I understand that
doesn't mean they're going to write you every time.
Let's say that, you know, John Smith is the supervisor, and he's pissed off at the next door neighbor, and he appoints the police chief, and the police chief. I'm just saying, you know, there is a concern of mine about it.
That could be in any category.
All right, so where do you want to go with this?
Well, I got some more stuff.
Go ahead.
Thanks. The tethered dog is free of any health condition that would be exacerbated by tethering. How are we going to find that out? I mean, I start to think about enforceability and whatnot on that. How, you know, let's say the dog is outside, you know, has a heart attack, strokes out. The person was supposed to know that the dog had congestive, you know, heart disease or something like that. This is where the doggy autopsy comes in. I mean, that part right there. I mean, what kind of when you write something like that, what kind of conditions are you thinking about? That would be readily known by the dog's owners.
There are the conditions, the examples that were given to me. Were a dog being tethered outside in the middle of the winter that has distemper.
Can I make a suggestion? Suppose we stick apparently after the word is. If you have a reasonable responsibility of knowing, you don't know. You don't know anything.
If you don't know, your dog is ill.
Well, you know, I'm just trying to keep things as short as I can. but so the dog has distemper. Okay, how do I know that it's the next door neighbor? Or then when the dog dies, and you wait till spring and you bury him. In other words, what are we going to call
the
sheriff's department on myself? I guess I don't understand the correlation.
It isn't that your neighbor calls because your dog is sick and out there. No, it is possible if you're a neighbor and you're looking out and that dog is coughing like crazy and looks like they're not healthy.
Okay.
You know, if someone calls on that basis, you know, then it's the animal inspection people who would determine. I don't think an officer would.
Who, you know, we're going to go round and round and round. So at some point, we either have to decide if we're ready to vote to move on or if we need the next meeting.
I just think changes need to be made.
Somebody needs to go. I don't know who you spoke to. We need to bring them in, what their thought process is.
I had asked Brian Shapiro to come tonight, and he was unable to. He had a previous engagement, you know, in his job as the New York State Humane Society director out in Syracuse, I think. I would be willing to have a special meeting of this committee to discuss this, and we could reach out to Brian and try to schedule something.
I think we need to do that.
I too spoke to Brian, and he said it should pass the way it is. Did you have a different conversation with him?
I told him I had a lot of concerns.
Did he tell you that it needed changes? He told me it should pass the way it is.
Oh, okay. Well, he didn't tell me it needed changes or it didn't need changes. It didn't need changes, I think, as the legislators were the ones who decided that.
I think Brian, in all fairness to Brian, if it said, you know, hang the guy in the first violation, he'd go with it because of his close to his care for animals. So
I can tell you that I have a close relationship with Brian, and his fiance is my veterinarian for my dog. I wouldn't say that he and I have ever really had a bad discussion about animal welfare or animal rights, and I'm not looking. I've made it clear in a bunch of committees, including this one last month and the law enforcement of the Laws and Rules Committee last month, I'm not against making dogs in Ulster County safer, but I want to do so while protecting homeowners, ensuring enforceability, and making sure that we're going after the people we need to be going after. I think that's more important than passing it quickly, or passing it as it is, or passing it with everything in it.
I think we should let it go to public hearing.
If we let it go to public hearing, Brian can come in, or whomever, and say, you know what, here's what I see as being wrong, and go back, give it back to us.
Then you have everybody talking about the... You know, if you go to public hearing, you hear everybody. You hear Brian, everybody else, and you can.
But you'll have people back problems with.
Well, if you solve it, somebody else comes up, and then somebody else. If you put a public hearing and you get an airing of it, all of the problems, if there are any, will come forward and look at them and change it or whatever.
You want it.
The only thing about doing a public hearing before we make any changes is, then if we come back and make changes after the public hearing, you're going to go back to public hearing again. It's going to delay it by 6 months. I mean, that goes against what you said last month.
Well,
at the Laws and Rules Committee, you wanted to make sure that dogs were protected as soon as possible.
I think we're going a little bit contrary to what a lot of people are telling me they want, and I'd like for them all to be heard. And I don't think you want to have a whole crowd of people coming into the committee and going at it. And from that point of view, I think we should hear it in public hearing.
Do you want to add a couple of changes? We noted.
There are a couple of changes.
The up-tos and the reasonable.
If we're going to let you go to public hearing, I have a couple of really important things that we have to change.
Okay.
It's repetitive. It's got dog has access to clean water, shelter, shade, and dry ground twice. It's in C, and it's its own E, so I would like that removed from C.
Okay. Is that okay?
Let me see.
Shade, food, water, and shelf.
But you'd have to, well, if we take it out, they could do a dry ground.
I think
why don't we add dry ground to C and get rid of E?
That's fine. Whichever way you want to do it.
Get rid of E.
And then under K, says, in addition to the above requirements, tethered dogs must be free of cruel conditions or inhumane tethering at any time. For the purposes of this section, cruel conditions and inhumane tethering shall include, but not be limited to, the following, but not be limited to, must be removed. Because when you're dealing with making a law, you can't make something not limited to it. It's specifically limited.
I agree. That was supposed to come out.
Okay. Not limited to, okay.
But we still have that one issue. The tethered dog is free of any health condition that would be exacerbated by tethering. What if you don't know?
I think putting apparently right after is if you should know the dog's coughing, there's all kinds of trouble, and you ignore it, then you got a problem. Apparently, if the dog has a heart condition that doesn't show anywhere, how do you know? You shouldn't be responsible for what you shouldn't reasonably know.
Sheriff, you'd be the one who'd be, one of the ones would be enforcing this. I mean, this is maybe it's an appropriate question. How do you think that you, as say you're the responding officer, how would you like that worded in order to be able to make a determination?
Well, apparently, all right. The rank and file person isn't going to know, but they would call somebody who would, either the SPCA or the animal control officer.
Right.
Unless you were somebody, I raised dogs. I raised hunting dogs for a lot of years.
Yeah.
So I'd have a little heads up. Mark was one of our canine handlers.
Yeah.
They have a heads up. So I guess apparently so.
Well, in the law, there's the reasonable man standard, reasonable person standard. What would a reasonable person do? And that's what I'm trying to.
That's why I'm. That's why I'm. That's
again,
why.
Let me insert one word. Any known health condition.
I'm not in a hurry to apparently.
I think apparent's better than known,
apparently,
because how do you prove? How do you prove that they know? That's even harder than apparent.
Which is now F, actually, but.
My wife takes him to the doctor.
What else? Okay.
I was going to ask for an exception to be added for dogs training for an endurance race or other competition. Right now, I believe in Woodstock, but I could be wrong about that. There's somebody training for the Identity Rod.
Okay.
I know a lot about Woodstock for that.
What are you training for?
The Iditarod, the dog sledding.
But I'm sure they're not putting the dog's life in jeopardy or anything, so sure they're drinking and eating.
There's shade right around. They would probably need to be exempted from the 12-hour rule.
They still can't use a dog.
Because when the dogs are involved in a dog sled race, they're pretty much tethered 24 hours a day.
If they're not entangled or anything, they slide there. They sit there. They do what they do. But I don't.
I'm just throwing it out there.
I'm just saying I don't.
I think we're worrying about what happens.
Right.
The school bus loses 13 tires on the way down the hill on an even month on an odd day.
Fair enough.
What happens if the brakes didn't go out and we go what if all
right.
freaking day long here?
Right.
So
I'm fine with not having that in there.
All right. So then
the second section six, the secret determination, belongs in the enacting resolution, not in a local law, in my opinion.
The second section six.
Why do we have two section sixes?
I have seven.
This one says six and six.
I have
right.
Okay. Well, we can yes.
How about 6A?
So
no, I think it should be in the resolution.
Usually when you do a local law, the secret determination is in the enacting resolution.
That's true.
Okay. All right. So
other than that,
I'm going to revamp real quick. Make sure Jay has them. Under section 3C, we have reasonable manner. We've added dry ground. We're deleting E, so F becomes E, and so on. In what is now the new F, which was the old G. Dog is apparently free of health conditions. Down in K, we have deleted but not be limited to. And under the violations, numbers 1 and 2, a fine of up to $100. And section 5, fine shall be up to $500.
I don't agree to the second one.
Well, I let me just say that in my hometown, the judge, if this went before one of the judges who remain nameless because I'll get in trouble, maybe. He'd probably just throw these out anyway. Because he's a judge, he can do whatever he wants to do. So I'd rather give that discretion. If you say to him, if he says, I'm not finding him $500, say, you know what, don't do it again. Just throw it out.
That's his second offense.
Doesn't matter. The judge can do anything he wants to do.
That's why he's a judge.
He can say, you know what, I'm not finding you $100. I think you're a knucklehead, but I'm throwing it out.
You usually find schedules on these things are to not
I'd rather
a mandatory minimum.
Have it set up such that a judge could say, I'm going to fine you $50. Because I know my judge, he's going to say, I think that's too much, that's unreasonable, and throw the damn
thing. Or I can fine you $200.
He does it now with every other thing he looks at.
Next time you come back, it'll be $500.
Well, if he wants the $500, he'll give the $500. If he wants to do something less, you're giving him an opportunity to do it rather than just throwing it and saying, don't do it again.
So,
and this is a point where the judge sees the person, one, two, five times, or if the judge has seen the person on other issues and knows that they're a flagrant lawbreaker or actual lawbreaker, that they can give up, they can give more or less, depending on, the knowledge of the community.
I know the guy I'm talking about. He ain't flying with this, and he'll end up throwing it out. And if he throws it out, then it never really happened. I'd rather have it happen and have him find $10 than have him throw it out, because that's the way he plays.
The other part is, if there's going to be a registry down the road, you want it on record.
That's what I'm thinking.
And if they throw it out, it ain't going to be on record.
I'd rather get $5 from a one-hour community service than nothing, because now it's a conviction.
Well, also it doesn't really hurt it because he can give him the $500, he can give him $200, even if you say $500, right. He can give him nothing. So what you're doing is you're giving him an opportunity to charge money up to a certain amount, which you don't want to go over anyway, but if you're going to get something from him, you might get something less, but you're getting something.
And a conviction. And a conviction.
Right, and
that's all we want.
Right.
You know, you guys raised some really good points. I have to yield.
And seven is, we'll move that to the resolution.
Yes.
So then 8 becomes 7 and 9 becomes 8.
What happens with the 2 6s? Is that bad?
Well,
that was 9 and 7. So.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Special.
All right.
Should there be a point of jail time?
You want to have a much longer discussion?
No.
Only 2 weeks. Only 2 weeks till session.
Just so you know, I'm not against having jail time, but I want it for much much more fun, much more violations than probably you would want.
So
land somewhere in the middle.
With the
personal criticism.
With the changes we have made, we have. What I'm going to ask is to rescind the motion again. Okay, and then we'll make the new motion with the law
as amended.
Before you do, the sponsor, I need to agree to those changes.
Okay.
Well, so
I'm hoping you're going to.
So I agree. Well, I want to keep the formality.
Motion.
I'll make the motion.
Peter.
Second.
I'll second.
Inspector agrees. No.
He agrees.
All right. Any other discussion?
Yeah. Can I comment?
Whoa! All of a sudden,
please.
We'll enforce whatever you guys bring down the pipe. But I gotta mention what you said, Don. That it should go to public hearing. Let's hear what everybody else has to say. I've been trying to get the alarm law passed. We've been trying to get the pawnbroker's antique law passed, and it's gone nowhere. And that's since 2008.
Well,
so I'm hoping. No,
okay.
Let me finish.
So
I'm hoping that when we bring it back next month or the month after, both these, that everybody says, let it go to public hearing so we can hear what everybody else is saying. The alarm law, we handle probably 15 false alarms a day. So multiply that times 365 and then figure however you want to make the law, either the second time or third time, that you fine them. And if they don't pay, it goes under taxes. The county stands to make some money, which will go back to paying for the wear and tear and the time and effort that we go to handle all the alarms, because we have to go anyway. So I would just ask for this, and we're going to, whatever you guys decide on, we're going to enforce it, and our guys will do a good job like they always do.
But I would ask when this comes to fruition that we do the same thing. Let's hear what everybody else has to say.
I'll do is let's bring the alarm law back in October.
I was just about to say, Sheriff, feel free to, I'll put my name on that and introduce it for next month for you to hold.
If it flies, it flies. If it doesn't, hey, then it's off the table.
Now, I do want to say real quick before we finish on this that I haven't spoken to him directly, but I was told earlier today by somebody who's talked to him that the district attorney has concerns about being the individual to prosecute this.
Why?
So.
Cappy says he's spoken with him and
he will?
It's okay. Yeah.
Okay. Okay.
All right, before we vote, I want to respond to the sheriff's comments because they're serious.
Based on the tethering law?
No. Let's vote on the tethering.
First?
Yeah, I guess.
Vote on the tethering law, but no, I want to respond to the sheriff's comments.
So all in favor of the public hearing for the tethering law?
Okay.
Opposed?
Okay, thank you. Now, Don.
Okay, regarding, let's start with the antique dealers law. First of all, the antique dealers were excluded in that law. Okay. Second of all, I spent the better part of a morning and half of an afternoon with Chief Sinatra. And when it came forward, not a change was made. Not a comma, not a period, nothing was changed in it. I told them why and how it did not work. And they wanted to bring it back. And they also got a letter under the Sheriff's Association or the police, whatever they
police chiefs association.
The Police Chiefs Association, admonishing me for my stance. I still got that at home. And I don't know that they agreed to it or that they understood it in any way. I asked to have a meeting with, when it was coming before the this committee in the past, and having people here that could better analyze and explain what the problems were with it, never happened. So before we get into any type of public hearing, before any of that happens, I think that's absolutely necessary. The second thing is, on the alarm law, same issue. I asked to have one of the professionals come in and talk to how and why, what you should be doing in order to avoid the problems that you're facing. That never happened. And it was in this committee that I suggested it, and it still hasn't happened.
So with this tethering law, we could have had Brian Shapiro come in, but instead of all, it went to public hearing. So it could go to public hearing, and the professionals could come in at the public hearing. And I don't mean to get into a tit-for-tat, but this is going to a public hearing, and again, Ken and everybody else, we'll do what we have to do. But the other stuff never made it. Whether you disagree with the pawn law or the alarm law, that doesn't matter. Maybe everybody else is okay with it, and it could have gone to a public hearing.
The bottom line is that we've come to an agreement here with people that have talked to Shapiro and other people. That hasn't happened with either of the other two.
All right, so we're going to have the alarm law in front of us in October. Okay.
I'll bring Abe Markowitz in the October.
Thank you.
Well, okay. I hope you bring in some professionals.
I haven't seen Abe in a while.
You bring your professionals in. I'm bringing in the guys and statistics for that. If you want to bring somebody in, feel free.
If this committee doesn't want to hear from professionals and you don't want to bring them, then they're not here.
I don't need to bring a professional. I can tell you how many false alarms we have.
I don't want to talk to the professional, and I'll tell you why. Melville High School.
They're redoing their alarms when they're working over the summer and janitors and stuff. We're getting 3 to 4 calls a day into the high school, fire alarms, okay? Disconnect the fire alarm, but they can't. So we keep getting calls because the bumping machine and everything else sets it off. So, but they're false alarms. The ambulance responds, the fire department responds.
Does Ellenville have a policy of fines after so many?
No.
Why not?
I don't know, but
the point is, that's not what we're discussing here. The fact is, you want the professionals. The fact of the matter is, you know,
well, they have to come unless they're invited, and they have to be invited by.
Well, you know what?
I bet
you a dollar. It's like my theory that the reason we don't speed is because when we get caught and our insurance goes up, it makes us think about going fast. If there was penalty for doing wrong, we do wrong. Why? Because it doesn't cost us anything.
You know what? If we needed to bring in the professionals, why would it be that Esopus passed a false alarm law and the false alarms dropped dramatically because somebody was paying?
Okay, let's move on.
One last thing and I'm done.
Discuss it in October.
Woodstock had an alarm law that was terrible. And I spoke to the issue point by point by point. They invited in somebody who does this for a living. They changed the entire law. Now it's terrific because it attacked the problem. And the problem was
stewards and schools and things along that way. And there's fines that are built in, which are fine, but they attack the problem. They just don't give it window dressing. Is it, we get everybody and we don't stop the problem. We just make people pay. We stop the problem.
And that's what, guess what? You start paying, I guess I'd stop. Anyway, let's go to number two, Resolution 320. Authorizing Chairman of the Ellis County Legislature to execute agreement here, State Division of Criminal Justice Services, to accept additional funds for Crimes Against Revenue Program.
So moved.
Second?
I'm moving.
Okay. Discussion, I have a letter here. This is essentially money for a forensic CPA for the District Attorney's Office. From Holly. So. Other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Three, authorizing Chairman of the State Legislature to execute an agreement with New York State Office of Victim Services for funding under the Victim and Witness Assistance Grant Program, Department of Probation. Let's see. Got it. Okay.
Do we have anything from the executive's office or anybody who's here to speak about? I wasn't sure.
Really, no.
I'm sorry you had to stay here the whole time.
I screwed up on that. That was my fault.
This actually funds the Crime Victims Program that we've been operating up since 1978.
Excellent.
It does represent an increase in funding over the past. It's usually been a grant that's been renewed, but this year they have to go hold the grant process and resubmit the contract. So.
Right. Did I get a first on that? I'm sorry.
No.
I move it. Second. Okay, discussion. We already discussed it. All in favor?
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Okay. Thank you. Four, Resolution 322, greeting one full-time position, amending the 2014 Ellis County Budget Department of Probation. I move it first.
Move it.
Second.
Second.
Okay.
Whatever.
Discussion.
Dealer's
choice. Okay, dealer's choice is to show it. Discussion.
This position was it's funded in the grant. Well, it's a small percentage of fringe that's not covered under the grant, but other than that, the whole position was funded based upon the increased work.
$2,940 is county money. The rest is appropriate given money, grant money.
I take it back.
Oh, just vote yes. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Okay, thanks. Number five, 323, authorizing the appropriation of funds for the restitution surcharge account for the use in confidential investigations. This is the sheriff's office.
Thank you very much.
Just transferring money from one line to another.
I'm sorry, I didn't know what they should be concerned. I apologize.
Take care.
Okay.
It's just transferring money from one line to the other. There's no effect on the account.
Okay. Let's move it. Move it. Second.
More discussion.
Second, Ken?
Yeah.
Okay, discussion then. Other discussion?
Not sure, vehicle leases?
It's going to go with vehicles, yes.
That's what I thought. Okay.
All in favor?
It's not much. It's only 6,000.
Yeah.
69,600. Opposed? Resolution 324, authorizing Chairman of the Ellis County Legislature to execute an agreement with New York State United Court System for reimbursement for court attainment.
Attendance.
The last word there.
What resolution is this?
324. Have a move and second, then for discussion.
Move on it.
Okay, second.
Candid.
Thank you. Okay, discussion.
Filling him an option.
And they're the old, not the old, sorry. They are the people that fill the water glasses with the judge. Walk the jury around. I didn't mean to say that. So they funnel them the through us.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks.
Okay.
I'm sorry to laugh. It was funny to me.
Other discussion?
They're good people.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Okay. We also have sheriff's report is attached. Okay, it was also good enough to send me the email.
Yes.
He did a little better, Paul. We only made $1 on the phones in July. We made 77 in August.
Yeah, but he did good. It was down 121.
Yeah,
that was the first time.
Good. That was good.
First time. But then the second half came in.
Yeah.
It took him back out and checked back in the bank.
Well, you know, right, basketball playoffs and stuff didn't really have to call it with you.
Honestly, the number that I want to point out, guys, and this is something that I think that we should keep an eye on ourselves, which might get us to a later discussion. But, you know, the sheriff, as of right now, is $402,000 ahead on Borden's. We know that Borden's might be a struggle next year, a lot more of a struggle than this year because of Dutchess County putting in pods. I think it's important for us to make some sort of policy prior to the books being closed at the end of the year that the $400,000 or $600,000 or however much the sheriff's department is going to be over at the end of the year gets put back into the sheriff's budget and doesn't get encumbered into the back into the to the general fund. Because, you know, I hear a lot that the sheriff does this or the sheriff does that, or we bicker about buying cars.
You don't want it to go where? Back into the general
account.
Why
I think
not?
We
support the sheriff's budget anyway, so why not have that as well?
I don't know if you can.
I think we could.
We'll find out.
Yeah, but I'm just saying I think it's an important discussion to have because like I say, if we get $200,000 worth of cars at the beginning of the year, we'll bicker about how many to buy and we'll take some away. I just think that it's time. This is money that the sheriff's operation is making for the county, to help fund the operations of the county. And I think that it's important.
And on that, I don't know if you can or not, but in our telephone money, at the end of the year, that would go into a special account. Eventually, we had that built up to about $350,000. And in one fell swoop, Mike and the legislature took it all away, and we would use that money every year for vehicles for the corrections. Now, we can't do that.
What is your total budget?
Teresa's here.
It's about $30 million.
Including the jail.
Every part. Including the court attendance, all the way down to urgent.
I don't know if you guys know Teresa Playwood.
She's
in charge of the money for the sheriff's office. Yes.
Now, just so everybody knows, I had asked the sheriff to give us sort of a and
Teresa, right?
Yes.
And Teresa to give us sort of an overview of the last few budgets. In discussions with the sheriff, we talked about certain things that are now in his budget that didn't used to be in his budget, and that's one of the things that I wanted us to look at, like computer equipment used to be in the Information Services Department. Now that replacement and maintenance is in the sheriff's budget. Things of that nature that have actually caused the sheriff's budget to rise over the years.
That's a question I would have to ask. Why have you moved it out of the IT department since that's what they specialize in?
That's the executive
decision.
Is it your concern, or did you get a phone call to bring up the concern?
I got a phone call where I was told that the sheriff's budget was rising.
And for the record, where did that phone call come from?
An executive could have called Teresa.
We have budget meetings every Monday morning. Well, only because I got to tell him or remind him that he can call me. I saw him in the hallway at the county building on Wednesday of last week. He goes, "Oh, we got to get together and talk about your budget." So when I got back here, I called Bert up and said, "Hey, Bert, is there any issues with our budget?" And he goes, "No, everything looks pretty good." And then I talked to you when? Friday.
Yeah, it was Friday. Yeah.
So now I'm living all weekend long, and now it's Monday. Everybody knows that the executive's calling, and I got to reach out for him tomorrow. And I don't want to get you jammed up.
No, it is what it is.
I'm at the department, whether anybody likes it or not, all he's got to do is call me. And I call Teresa, because I don't know the answer off the top of my head, but this lady does.
Well, frankly, is why I'm always a go to the horse's mouth kind of guy. That's why I called you to ask.
If you guys have specific questions, great, but I'm going to email the exec tomorrow and say, "Hey, tell me exactly what your questions are." Because Bert says there's no issue. And not too many weeks ago, there's an article in the paper saying, "Oh, the only department in the county that went over the 2% cap is the sheriff's office." And it's just not true. Right. So, anyway, I'm way ahead of horse.
Well, isn't the budget's balanced, right? When you submit a balanced budget,
we submit our budget. What we look for, they take out what they say we don't need, and then it goes up to the adopted budget. we give back money. I don't want to get into it.
No, what I'm trying to say is
I don't want to tell anybody here.
I understand.
And then somebody runs back to the executive.
I need
a piece in the hole here.
I understand.
What I'm trying to.
I was trying to dance around the subject.
Well, I'm not. I'm trying to find out.
Yeah.
What I'm trying to find out is, in the balanced budget, the things that you need, aren't they in the budget automatically without having a leftover put into whatever account you want to call it?
Uh-huh.
I don't understand the need for it. If the things that you need in the budget are in the budget,
right.
What do the other things do?
Nothing.
I think, if I may, what he's looking at is if he generates an extra $600,000 worth of revenue, maybe he could replace 12 cars instead of 10. So,
maybe we could spend the $600,000 to replace cars instead of bonding for it.
Right.
Or maybe,
stay off the cars.
Okay,
I'm just joking.
All right, I've got a quick question. How much of the budget is comprised of salaries?
A large portion of it. And now we have benefits in our budget as well.
Well, what is it?
Approximately. Overall or just one division?
Overall. If you've got a $30 million budget, how much of that can be spent? How much of that
85 to 88
is made up of salaries?
85 to 88%.
Let me see what sheet I have that on.
Personnel-related.
I was looking at overall. I did payrolls.
One of the concerns I have, just so everybody is aware while she's looking at the budget on an overall basis,
if you don't have it tonight, I can get that.
I'm making a note, and I'll email everybody that answer tomorrow.
Or do you have the personnel component of the budget?
But that's everybody. And then they got to break it down.
That's one thing I didn't total up.
I want to know.
But we would need to know benefits still.
That would be included. That's included. That's got to be included in the number. That's what I'm saying. How much of the budget, the overall $30 million budget, is comprised of salaries and benefits?
I think it's $9,350,000.
Kenny.
And that's just salaries.
One of the concerns that I have...
Including corrections officers, to us, everybody.
But does that include benefits?
No.
I would like to know the benefits as well.
That's benefit back is usually what, 60%?
I got this sheet. All I have to do is total it for you.
That's got to be in close to 70. You know what I mean?
I think it's 47.
47%?
Yeah. Usually personnel and personnel-related items. You're going to do 85 to 88% of it.
And that includes road patrol, jail, administration, everybody.
Nothing.
One of the concerns I have about looking at the overall budget instead of specific portions of the budget, and especially in the sheriff's department, is that we're constitutionally required to operate a jail.
Correct. And civil. Yes.
And right. Civil division.
Right.
So, the portion,
The road patrol?
That's why I think it's important to see the breakdown on all the
what portion?
The road patrol used to be part of corrections. That changed back in 1990.
No, way before that. We went civil service in 79 or 80, and that's when they separated everybody.
Well,
used to be before that, everybody was a deputy sheriff in 79 or 80. Tommy Mayone.
I didn't come here to listen.
Because I was here. Tommy Mayone split the divisions when we went civil service, and you were either a deputy sheriff or you were a correction officer.
Right, but they did what? When it came to union negotiations, they were all under the same
umbrella. So yes. Where are we going?
Then they changed that back in the 90s.
Yes.
Bring it home. Where are we going with it?
And by doing that, that's when they gave up. That's when, because that it's not.
They went to separate unions, yeah.
And when I said at that time, when you separate it, that gives the legislature any opportunity to abolish it because it's no longer mandated.
Do we have specific questions that we'll so go through Jay to get them and get you the information?
Well, I got three down already, so does anybody have any more?
The difference between the budget now and the budget before all of the things were added in that were from other departments, like benefits, like IS, like...
We'll get that to you for sure.
Okay. What else you got? Old, new...
I just wanted to say, I was trying to get hold of me in regard to the inmates and all that. They're still working on it. She's been on vacation for the last 2 weeks, so it's been,
I was looking for
it. When she doesn't do it, I guess it just doesn't Yeah, so I'm going to reach out to her again tomorrow. I tried last Friday.
We are looking, and I can tell you it already passed the Criminal Justice Committee of Greene County. Greene County wants to enter into an agreement for shared services. So they have a big event. We can send people up there. If they need our dive team, it's a mutual aid thing. It's never been in writing. We've always done it. So they want to put it in writing now with Greene County, Delaware, Ulster, Columbia, Dutchess, and I think maybe Rensselaer, the next one up.
Are we going to need to? We're going to need to approve that.
It's in the county attorney's hands now to look over so that the wording is the way they want it. Then it'll go back to them. Once they're happy with it, it'll bring it back here.
Okay. Did that happen?
Yeah. Oh, go.
No, go ahead, Pete.
Go ahead.
If that happens, if you say you're doing shared services and one of your officers gets hurt, is that on us? Or is that on them?
It'll be on whoever you work for.
So
if I'm working for them up in Greene County and I get hurt, it's on us. If they're down here working for us and they get hurt, it's on them.
It's
the way it is now with the MOU for urgency. And that's the way the county attorney wanted it.
Yeah. Which is why Quigley took his man out. But anyway, it's a long story.
Okay. I just want to, put it on the record and thank the sheriff. He always comes to our meetings. He always gives us all the information we ask for. If he's not able to be here, somebody who knows the answers or can get us the answers is here. So I just want to go on record and thank you for that. And thank Teresa for coming.
Teresa gave up her baby.
I told it up everything that you wanted about that one.
We'll get it all to you. She's the person. Are there any other questions? You can either ask her directly. You don't have to go through.
Yeah, anything you want, I got to spread.
I love the sound of that.
Well, you know what they say. You want to talk to the man in charge or the woman that knows what's going on.
They say that in my house, too. I don't understand. But I'm the guy in charge. I'm
here, we got three, four, maybe five. And run the show as far as I'm concerned.
Good for you.
What else we got? If nothing, who would like to say?
I make a motion.
Peter, second.
Okay. Does everybody have a swipe card?
You got one.
Yes.
You got one.
All in favor?
Aye.
I got one, but finally.